You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Feb 18, 2021, there's a report from the Pentagon. Listen to this, hear this. According to the Pentagon, about one-third of U.S. military troops have turned down a vaccine for the COVID virus. They're saying something like 916,000 doses have been administered. 359,000 receiving at least one dose, 147 fully vaccinated, but still about a third are turning down the vaccine for the Chinese Communist Party virus. In the meantime, are you still waiting to get your vaccine? You think you're going to get any? Do you want it? Not going to get it. In New York, a waitress who was pregnant said she did not want to get it. Well, she got fired because she wouldn't get it. She's pregnant. She can't make that decision on her own. But if you're still waiting, you need to know this. Some of the immigrants, illegal, being held by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they are now getting COVID-19 vaccines. They are now getting COVID vaccines. The Immigration Customs Enforcement saying detainees are allocated by local and state health departments, up to the state to decide when they are vaccinated as part of the overall plan. ICE not saying exactly how many have already been administered to detainees, but they got something like 14,000 in custody at last check. All this comes amid questions from Democrat lawmakers in California who urged the state to make sure detainees are vaccinated. Yeah, they're going to make sure they get their vaccine before you get yours, apparently. By the way, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, he's speaking out against Andrew Cuomo. They do not have a love affair and never have. But now he's backing up New York State Assemblyman Ron Kim, claiming that Cuomo had threatened Kim during a heated phone call. De Blasio said there clearly needs to be a full investigation. He's talking about the nursing home scandal. The deaths inside the nursing homes, and we were given false numbers when they finally presented some numbers. And de Blasio said, yeah, it's a sad thing to say, reference that phone call that Assemblyman Kim said he got. But that's classic Andrew Cuomo. He said a lot of people in New York State have received those kinds of phone calls. And Kim said Cuomo reportedly asked him if he's an honorable man repeatedly and then threatened that you, Assemblyman Ron Kim, will be finished and destroyed. There's your bully. Sad news involving former U.S. Senator and presidential nominee Bob Dole. Diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, stage 4. He said, I'm going to start treatments on Monday. I have some hurdles ahead, but I know I joined millions of Americans facing significant health challenges of their own. Bob Dole, Kansas senator, served in World War II, 97 years age at this point. NBC is reporting that Texas claims that some of the Texas the Energy Council folks were saying the state of Texas was, the power grid was seconds, minutes from catastrophic failure over the weekend. We're going to get into that in more detail in this hour. I've got an expert coming up that knows exactly what's going on in Texas. In the meantime, as you heard on the network news, about 500,000 are still without power, apparently. And it's caused a problem as well in Austin because of homes and businesses without power, some still without it at the time. Now they've issued boil water advisories in several cities, including Austin, where residents are asked to conserve water. Austin, Texas, my home birth state and city, has gone blue while the rest of the state is red. So I hope they love the fact that this is underway for them. Of course, they're going to try to say again, if we had more green energy, it would have been perfect. We'll deal with that issue also with our expert coming up. And in case you missed what I was pointing out the last of the previous hour, Senator Ted Cruz flew to Cancun, Mexico with his family. And the left is going bonkers. How dare he go out of Texas in the midst of this frigid weather and go to Cancun? He said, my daughters were on a trip with some friends. I flew them down like a good dad. I'm flying back. I'm in contact with the state. Calm down. No, you can't get them to calm down. NASA's Mars rover will make its descent on the red planet sometime later today. And China has a satellite rover circling Mars as I speak.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Run, run, run with the railroad when their backs are turned. Run, run, run with the railroad when their backs are turned.
Run, run, run with the railroad.
Get out of their sight.
When the engine turns, then you gotta move on. And you
gotta move on at night.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I wasn't expected to make it to October and then to November and then to December. And yet, here I am. And today, I've got some problems, but I'm feeling pretty good today. God's with me today. So many people have put me first in all of this. And I understand now what Lou Gehrig meant. Because I certainly feel like that. I feel extremely fortunate and lucky. And because I have outlived the diagnosis, I've been able to receive and hear and process some of the most wonderful, nice things about me that I might not have ever heard had I not gotten sick.
Those are the words of Rush Limbaugh from December of last year, December 23rd, updating his audience on how he was doing. He had told them the January before that he had been diagnosed with lung cancer, and he said, I don't want to become a cancer patient and play it out on the air for everyone because many people have it and deal with it. He said, but I'm just going to explain it to you, and since that I might have to miss a lot of programs. I want you to know what's going on. I feel you're my friends, my followers. You need to know. And he seldom mentioned it. That was that December that he did. And, of course, then he passed away yesterday of stage 4 lung cancer. And he mentioned, you know, at least by having it, I'd been kind of blessed in the sense that the response from people when they knew about it and the comments and the praise and so forth, he said, now I understand Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig, of course, had played for the Yankees, and it was a July 4th day, 1939, that he delivered what has been called baseball's Gettysburg Address, sold-out crowd at Yankee Stadium. He always avoided public attention. He did not want to speak, but the crowd chanted for him, and he had memorized some sentences beforehand. Some parts he might have stated differently than what he originally planned, but the final four sentences, as assembled from newspaper accounts, state Lou Gehrig saying, "For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad break. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. When you look around, wouldn't you consider it a privilege to associate yourself with such fine-looking men who are standing in uniform in this ballpark today? That I might have been given a bad break, but I've got an awful lot to live for. Thank you." The crowd stood and applauded for almost 2 minutes. Gehrig obviously shaken as he moved away from the microphone, wiping some tears away. Babe Ruth, former teammate, sometimes they were not the best of friends, came over and hugged him. The New York Times the next day called it, quote, one of the most touching scenes ever witnessed on a ball field. Even made hard-boiled reporters swallow hard. So that's what Limbaugh was talking about. Now he said, now I know what he felt like because of all the blessings he'd had and those who were there for him and cared about him and showing their love. But, you also had the critics rush in. The vile hatred of the left spewing open as if you lifted the lid off of a sewer. I debated as to if I were going to devote any time to this part of the story, but I thought I'm not going to let it go unnoticed. I do not want them to get a pass and just kind of say it in the dark of the night and keep moving. Some of them, what they've said on air and in print is probably tame compared to what they've said in back rooms and among their friends and on the phones and texts and emails yesterday when word came that Limbaugh had passed away. I do know that within minutes after the death of Limbaugh, CNBC ran a headline about it. But how did they do it? Their slant is so evident, it reads, "Rush Limbaugh, the incendiary radio talk show host, dies at age 70. Well, I guess on one point, you could consider that a praise, Limbaugh being incendiary. President Trump, of course, had given him the Presidential Medal of Freedom during the State of the Union a year ago this month on the 4th, 2020, and said, "Rush Limbaugh, thank you for your decades of tireless devotion to our country." And, of course, the left went crazy over that. They did not like the fact that that honor went to Limbaugh. It's the highest honor that can be bestowed upon a civilian, and they think that just destroyed all of it. And I'm telling you, the stuff that began to spew from these people is sickening. It would be easy for me to walk away and say, you know, I'm not going to give them any time. Now, I don't want to give them any more oxygen. But I want to point out exactly what they are. Let me tell you something. I don't really hate anyone. There's not anyone in my life I hate. I consider that a strong word. Stronger than many words. When the Marines, I knew I could kill someone without hating them. It's just going to be a mission. And I don't hate anyone. I may dislike someone. I don't want to tolerate them. Don't want to be around them. But I don't hate. To me, that's such a strong word. And only person I would hate is someone who did something to my family or children. And in some cases, you look at cases like that, and maybe it's not even the person. You hate what they did. But yeah, if it's one of my kids or my family, yeah, I could come up with hate in a hurry. But some on the left, and it's not all of them. There are good Christians and Jews and people of other faiths on the left that don't have this vile hate inside of them either. But many that have the pulpit for mainstream media, as they call it, have it and they use it often. I'm looking at a piece by MSNBC opinion columnist Dean Obadiah. And talking about how Trump praised Limbaugh as irreplaceable, fantastic man, a fantastic talent. And then Dean just can't help but say it was Limbaugh's open embrace of racism, bigotry, and sexism that led the groundwork for Trump to win the White House. It did not. I didn't vote for Trump for embracing, as if you want to believe that he did, or Limbaugh embracing, which he didn't either, because of racism, bigotry, or sexism. Obama's former chief of staff had once called Limbaugh the voice and intellectual force of the Republican Party. And he said, according to Dean in his column, he showed Trump that you could be as vile and hateful as you want, there'd still be a mass audience to the right who loved it. They can always point to the right, but they never look into the mirror at themselves. There were some things that Limbaugh did that I had disagreements with as well, as well with Trump. But even for those disagreements at this point, do you really want to revel in a death of someone? One of his longtime friends and a talented producer, James Golden, a black man that on the air Rush referred to as Mr. Snurdly, Bo Snurdly. Sometimes he'd use a full name, other times just Mr. Snurdly. A very dear friend of Rush, who loved him as well. But here came MSNBC host Joy Reid, and she was making a reference to a parody that aired on one of the Limbaugh programs, and you might not like it. I'm not going to say you have to like the parody or not, but it was a parody, and you might still say, well, that's nothing to make fun of. I'll leave that to your judgment. But aside from the parody, it's her vile intent to take a man's death and maybe make some ratings points with it, to be factual. Joy Reid.
Dana, he called, the Affordable Care Act, secret reparations and racialized something that had no racial undertone to it, other than it definitely lifted people of color on average, more, because black and brown people had less health care, right? But he racialized it, and he got white Americans to hate the Affordable Care Act. He called President Obama Barack the Magic Negro and used his black sidekick as a cover to be able to do like that kind of outright racist stuff. I mean, if any person other than Donald Trump would have been president, it would have been him, because he basically was president for the last 4 years.
So that parody, as she referred to, was explaining everything about his racism. Limbaugh and in turn Trump. That's going to be your judgment. I disagree with it. But again, what she's trying to do is point out that it's probably a good thing the world is free of Limbaugh. This is the same woman who referred to House Majority Whip Steve Scalise after he was nearly murdered during that baseball shooting in 2017. You remember that story when they were gathering, some of the Republican members gathering for their ball game coming up, and they were doing some workout, and a guy showed up and opened fire on them. Do you remember that? A couple of Capitol Police just happened to get there quick enough, one of them being a woman, who I did not know at the time was apparently lesbian. Not that made any difference, but apparently that was something Joy and others pointed out. Look, here's Scalise being saved by a lesbian, and he was against things like that. She referred to that Steve Scalise, his record, that he was a co-author of a bill to amend the Constitution to define marriage as being between a man and a woman. That's what she's trying to say. Well, I know many gays that do not like the use of the term marriage either. They don't want to call it a marriage. They want to call it something else. They say, that's for my parents. But I'm also not in favor of a constitutional amendment dealing with it either. And she attacked Steve Scalise for vetoing the GOP, or rather voting for the GOP House Health Bill. So? And she blasted him for being a co-sponsor bill to repeal a ban on semi-automatic weapons. All of this she's doing while the guy's basically still recovering from a deadly attack carried out by a Bernie Sanders supporter. But I would not blame Bernie for it, and certainly they weren't either. I do think that yesterday some of you might not have heard the initial announcement of Rush's death. So I wanted to let you hear it again if you missed it, because his wife, Catherine Limbaugh, came to the microphone.
ladies and gentlemen, Catherine Limbaugh.
Hello, everyone. I know that I am most certainly not the Limbaugh that you tuned in to listen to today. I, like you, very much wish Rush was behind this golden microphone right now, welcoming you to another exceptional 3 hours of broadcasting. For over 32 years, Rush has cherished you, his loyal audience, and always look forward to every single show. It is with profound sadness I must share with you directly that our beloved Rush, my wonderful husband, passed away this morning due to complications from lung cancer.
Those are the words of Catherine Limbaugh yesterday making the announcement on Rush's program. I mentioned in the previous hour an interview that Rush had done at one time with Koppel, and also how he was treated and seen by members of the left anyway. I want to share with you the Time magazine cover story, the way Rush shares the story. And also Andrew Cuomo and COVID. The CNN team is actually thinking of asking tough questions? Really? Oh, you got to stand by for this. That's coming up.
Well, I started out with one lone dollar, gambled with a man, and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So Rush Limbaugh had been talking at one point about when he was supposed to be a guest with Ted Koppel on Nightline. He was, well, you know, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't really need it, but he did. In his assessment of Ted Koppel, I'm reading here from a transcript of his program. He said, Ted Koppel is not a dumb guy, but people on the left have such closed minds. They live in their little cocoons. They are made nervous when anything outside their cocoon tries to get in. They shut it out. They ridicule it. He said, they resort to telling you how they feel, but they can't tell you why they think anything. It's all about feeling. He said, but we have destroyed the media because we have made facts irrelevant. And yet these people are the architects of fake news. He said, and clearly that's what the mainstream media, or now state-controlled media, as I refer to it, SCM, is doing and will continue doing. There's another piece I want to share from Limbaugh before we wrap up today, and basically what happened with him in Time magazine. Some of you might recall he was on the front cover of Time magazine in 1995. You may not recall the picture right away, or then again you might. But I'll cover that before we wrap up today. Well, CNN is doing something that probably is shaking Andrew Cuomo considerably. Do you remember, for those of you old enough, or at least you've heard about it, when Walter Cronkite on CBS Evening News started speaking out against the Vietnam War, and President LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, heard that and said, basically, if we've lost Cronkite, we've lost the nation, we've lost the war. Well, CNN has been a great defender and cover-up for Cuomo and this nursing home scandal. And his brother, when he's had him on, has not interviewed him at any point about it. And the other night when he was on this town hall meeting with Anderson Cottonmouth Cooper, they didn't raise any question about it. But Jake Tapper has stepped out and said, you know, this nursing home thing is a scandal. And in his closing monologue of one of his programs, he ripped Cuomo, saying where those people died and why they died, and if they died because of Cuomo's March directive, that is information in the public interest. And fear of political enemies using the data against you, that's not an excuse for covering it up from the public. But that's exactly what the chief of staff for Cuomo had said the other day when she thought she was talking to Democrat assemblyman who would not spread the word, telling them, yeah, we did not give you a lot of figures and correct figures because we were worried about the DOJ, the Trump administration, getting hold of them, maybe using them against us. So we did not give you real numbers about the number of deaths. They weren't giving anybody real numbers. So you got several of the assemblymen, Democrats included, they want an investigation. One of them, New York Assemblyman Ron Kim, as reported by CNN, again, CNN doing this, claims that Cuomo called him at home and threatened his career. Kim says, no man has ever spoken to me like that in my entire life. At some point, Cuomo tried to humiliate me, asking, are you a lawyer? I didn't think so. You're not a lawyer. Kim said, it's almost like in retrospect, he was trying to bait me, anger me, to say something inappropriate. I'm glad I didn't. Cuomo is steaming. Kind of like the lobster in the water. It's getting a little warm in here. It's getting hot. It needs to get hot in Texas. The power outage and who's to blame. Coming up.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne. Red light.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. Well, in Texas, we're told that now only, and I say only, 500,000 are still without power. And boil orders are in effect for various places, like Austin, Texas, as they get the water pumps going again. They want to make sure the water is boiled and safe till they get it back up to full compliance. And, of course, this misfortune over Texas is this major cold snow and freeze hit the state and the Midwest. And the turbines across Texas, the wind turbines, suddenly ineffective in that. And apparently 25% of the energy for Texas is generated by those. So here comes AOC rushing in, saying the infrastructure failures in Texas are quite literally what happens when you don't pursue a Green New Deal. In other words, we needed more turbines. Well, let's get a different take on that, at least an insight from Jason Isaac, four-time Texas State Representative. He is now the president, director, I should say, of Life Powered. That's a national initiative of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. They say we're trying to raise America's energy IQ. Jason, thanks for joining us, sir.
Great to be on, Larry. We can't raise AOC's IQ very much at all. I mean, we would need so much more wind. And I'm just talking about not the generation. We actually need the wind to blow. And so I guess maybe we get her out there with a hairdryer. Helping generate electricity.
Yeah, that might help. Really quick to clarify, what is Life Powered? It's described as a national initiative of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, but is it conservative leaning? Give us some take on where that comes. I know you served as a representative as a Republican. I should point out. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. The Texas Public Policy Foundation is the largest state-based think tank outside of Washington, D.C., that believes in liberty, personal responsibility, and free enterprise. And the Life Powered is a project of the foundation that makes the connection between human flourishing and access to affordable, reliable energy. And there's a perfect example we're making today. In Texas, surprisingly in Texas, we have heavily subsidized and distorted the market to favor unreliables, these wind and solar generators. And that's why we've seen a massive growth in renewable, unreliable generation capacity, but not actual generation.
So
the net loss of thermal energy over the last 4 years and a massive gain of unreliables.
So do you agree that the wind turbines and solar have a use, but you're saying you got too dependent on it or too much of it being used? And certainly going all that way and getting rid of fossil fuels is not going to be an answer you accept. I don't. My daddy was a West Texas oil field man. I'm oil field trash and proud of it. Go ahead.
Well, and I've got it in my family as well, and we are certainly proud of it. You're not making any renewables without fossil fuel. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I love it when people say we got to ban fossil fuels, and I say, well, you first, and I'll see you at your funeral in about 3 weeks, because that's about how long they'd survive without fossil fuels. Maybe if that long. But we're seeing it firsthand today in Texas. People don't have access to clean water because the water pump shut down at our water treatment facility. They may not have electricity. You mentioned 500,000 people. It's actually 500,000 homes don't have electricity.
Correct.
Could be in the neighborhood of over 1 million people. Some of them have not had electricity for days.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. Because it is true. The number for the utility refers to wherever the utility box is. And you're right. You could have 2 to 6, 7, 8 people under that utility meter.
No, that's good. That's a good point. Yeah, it's 500,000 meters. And so, yeah, you raise a good point. It's over 1 million people still do not have electricity in the energy producing capital of the world, in Texas of all places. And like I said, it's market distorting policies that have put us here. I wrote about this last July that I knew we were going to get there. I quite honestly thought it was going to be in a heat demand time frame of August, not necessarily a cold snap in February. But here we are.
To that point, if you look at what the failure was with the turbines, I mean, obviously in the heat, they should still continue to exist, and the solar panels should love them. And it is correct that 25% of the Texas energy is produced by these wind turbines. Is that right?
Last year, it was close to 25% produced by wind and solar. So, yes.
All right. So you wrote a piece. And before I get to your piece, I want to ask something else very quickly. NBC News is reporting that you've got the Energy Reliability Council of Texas, which oversees all this for the folks that don't follow it. And NBC is quoting someone with them saying the Texas power grid was, quote, seconds or minutes, not hours, away from catastrophic failure. And that's why they started rolling blackouts to stop it from becoming worse than it might have been. Have you heard that? Or does that sound true or what?
No, that's absolutely accurate. Early Monday morning, we were within minutes, if not seconds, of losing the entire grid. About 90% of the Texans are served by the ERCOT, Electric Reliability Council of Texas, grid. And they fell asleep at the wheel. They woke up at the last second. They saw the deer. They swerved and started doing rolling outages. But by that time, it was too late. If they were awake at the wheel, they would have started the rolling outages much earlier on Sunday evening. And you take homes down for about 30 minutes, and that keeps the charge up in the grid. You have to have a certain voltage in the grid. And when that voltage gets too low, what happens is you see your thermal generation plants as a safety mechanism trip. And they tripped late Sunday, early Monday morning. And then ERCOT starts to react, and then they start doing rolling outages. And where do they do a rolling outage? In the Permian, the natural gas capital of the
West
world.
West Texas, Permian Basin, Midland, Odessa, Pecos, Big Spring area,
and they outaged pump stations, substations that are providing the natural gas to the power plants, to the homes, and to the hospitals to keep them warm. And natural gas supply went from 16.8 billion cubic feet to 4 billion cubic feet.
Wow, that's dramatic.
So you cut our natural gas supply. It just made matters so much worse.
Well, to that extent, my brother lives just south of Tyler, Texas. And, of course, folks, that's east of Dallas, about 80-plus miles. And he said last summer he bought a generator, mainly because of losing power just because of natural disasters, of tornadoes and lines coming down. He said it kicked on for about 2 hours in the morning, and he said, I thought it's just because we lost power. It turned out we were part of the blackout for 2 hours. I have to ask, though, when they're doing these blackouts, I know there were still several businesses and so forth where people weren't even in the buildings, and they were keeping them up probably to full speed. And rather than shutting off homes and places like that, why isn't that a priority, reorganized?
It's just an absolute failure of the grid operators and the local electric providers not preparing to say, okay, first place, we've got to keep our natural gas substations powered up. We've got to keep our military bases powered up. We've got to keep our hospitals powered up. And the others should be subject to the rolling blackouts. But I've seen the cityscapes, pictures of Houston, Dallas, Austin, all these places lit up. And it's just a poor execution of management by the electric providers of the local area and in the grid manager at the state level.
You're listening to Jason Isaac. He's director of Life Powered, a national initiative of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. AOC says if you had more green energy, it'd be better. You wrote a column saying the blackouts are the result of unreliable green energy.
That's exactly right. We've depended on it too much here in Texas. The capacity of these unreliable green energy has grown significantly. They're so heavily subsidized that they can actually pay the grid to take the product that they're producing. Why would anyone build a new natural gas-fired power plant or a new clean coal power plant when you're competing against someone that is so heavily subsidized they can pay their customers to take their product? And that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen a net loss of reliable thermal generation in Texas over the last 4 years, and that shouldn't be the case. We need a free market. We need to eliminate all of the subsidies, federal and state, for all forms of energy, and let the market compete. Now the dense energy, the reliable energy, will win.
One of the things I've seen as a criticism of what you have in Texas, you have your own power grid, the Energy Reliability Council of Texas. You don't buy from other grids. You don't supply other grids. Is that correct? And you basically have your own, but then the president, CEOs of those companies are either in California or New Hampshire, New York. They're not anywhere down there suffering through with everyone else. But basically, is that a mistake that you don't, or is it incorrect that you don't have connections to other power grids?
That's incorrect. We do have interconnections with the Eastern Interconnection, the Western Interconnection, and even with Mexico. And so there are times when we exchange power with Mexico. We'll send them electricity when we have excess and they need it, and vice versa. So we can interconnect. Those lines just aren't that big. They weren't powerful enough to be able to help us meet our demand here in Texas. But from a standpoint, if one of those eastern or western grids goes down, we're still going to be fine. We like it that way. We like our independence here in Texas. And some of the board members are out of state. That's appalling. The management is here in Texas, which is important. But we shouldn't have people that are especially the chair of the board of the Council of Texas that manages our electrical reliability based in Michigan, and that's the case, and that shouldn't be the case.
I agree.
And I think that'll be corrected here very quickly.
Yeah, I'll bet. So in the last 30 seconds or so, how's this put the Keystone XL cancellation in perspective and the need for fossil fuels and more of it?
Well, it certainly raises the light of that, and it's the same policies that have taken place that have hampered our growth for reliable energy here in Texas, because people fight pipelines tooth and nail when it's the safest and most efficient way to transport products to market and to get to consumers. And the same policies that you're seeing fighting the Keystone Pipeline, they're going to happen everywhere. That's why in Massachusetts and New England, they import natural gas from Russia.
Right.
Because the pipelines haven't been built across New York and servicing those people. And I cannot believe that they're actually importing liquefied natural gas in New England from Russia, of all places. That to me is sickening and appalling, and I hope this brings it to light.
Jason, I appreciate your time. We'll probably be touching back with you in the future, but I do appreciate you joining us today, sir.
Great to be on the show, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Jason Isaac, Director of Life Powered. I should mention to you that I worked as a roustabout for a period of time in the oil field and pipeline, so I'll talk about that when we continue. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So I mentioned I worked as a roustabout for a while in West Texas in the oil field, and a roustabout is not like you saw in the movie with Elvis, roustabout. This is the hardest, nastiest job available, and being the junior on the team, I got the nastiest job every time, and I remember us breaking down a pipeline and then basically using crowbars to walk, I don't know, maybe 300-plus yards of this thing, another 4 feet to one side. Why, I still don't know, but you didn't ask. You just did the job. And I am proud of that history and my dad's history with the oil field and all those who toil in those fields and what they do, just like I am of farmers and what they do in producing and providing for our country. We just don't give them enough appreciation. Quentin came in and advised me that the Mars rover Perseverance is getting close to landing on Mars. It should happen within the matter of minutes. So that we'll won't be here to tell you about it that time. I did mention to you previously about Limbaugh appearing on a Time magazine cover back in 1995, and here's how he described it. He said it was a Photoshop. It was kind of a grin. He said, I remember the picture I posed for. He said, but they monkeyed it around my mouth, make it look kind of churlish, and they drew some smoke coming out of it as though I was smoking a cigar, a big, fat, evil cigar. It was not a flattering picture. It was dark. It was heavily shadowed. Titled, Is Rush Limbaugh Bad for America? Again, that was 1995. And he points out the following week, Time Magazine's cover story, the very week after Limbaugh, is Limbaugh bad for America? The following cover the next week was Fidel Castro and his efforts to create an island paradise in Cuba. As Limbaugh said, it was just puke-worthy. It's a passing that what he contributed not only to talk radio and conservative talk and just talk in general and dialogue. Of course, most of the time for me it was a monologue, but it added additional dialogue. And, yeah, many believe that he's a reason Trump got elected, because he did step forward and endorse him early, because he said he's speaking the things folks want to hear. He could take some credit for it. Trump had been asked, do you want to step in and do that program? He said, no, I couldn't do it. But as he said, no one could fulfill that position going forward. I fully agree. Well, let me close out on something really positive. And I should tell you that tomorrow we're not going to be live. We're in the process of doing some electrical changes at the station, and we're just not going to be able to have the program live tomorrow. So we'll give you one of our best dubs I know you're going to like. But to close out this live portion this week, I'm reading a piece written by Helen Raleigh. It's titled, Here's Why This Immigrant Loves Singing the National Anthem at Games. Now, she refers by Mark Cuban, the Dallas Mavericks, deciding not to play the national anthem at the Mavericks. And he said, citing Mark's desire to listen to voices of those who feel the anthem doesn't represent them. But she said, but to me, a Chinese immigrant, Cuban's decision did not feel inclusive, but ignorant of what the anthem does represent. She pointed out, I never went to a professional sports event when growing up in China. At the time, all those teams are run by the Chinese government, state-claimed ownership of them. They trained day in and out and so forth, and I did not know any other sport than that. But then when I came to the U.S., she said, I attended a professional sports game for Shea Entertainment in May 1996, a few months after I'd moved to the U.S., went to a Baltimore Orioles game. Said, I've never been to an outdoor stadium, not to mention a baseball game. I'm surprised by the stadium and the size of the crowd. And then she noticed before the game started, the announcer asked her, I wanted to stand for the national anthem. And it got quiet. A young lady walked to the center of the field and began singing Star Spangled Banner. And she said, I noticed everyone around me, regardless of skin color or what team's jersey they were wearing, had their right hands over their hearts. They had hats, they took them off, as did the players on the field, some people singing along quietly. And, of course, a roar of whistles and claps when it ends with the home of the free and home of the brave. See, I didn't really understand much about baseball, but I was touched by the American pride. And then she talked about how that made such an impression on her and patriotism. And these are her words again. She said, playing the national anthem before a sporting event is a beautiful American tradition. Unfortunately, it's been under attack by the nation's most privileged leftist class, multimillionaire athletes such as Colin Kaepernick choosing to kneel rather than stand for the national anthem because they see the national anthem and the American flag as symbols of racial oppression. Now, this is a woman born in China and raised in China and certainly could never express views that would be contrary to the government while there, and yet here you can. She said, they're now trying to shame all Americans into believing there's nothing we had to be proud of, rather than making America a better place for all. These efforts have intensified division among Americans. I fully agree. Piece written by Helen Raleigh for The Federalist. I appreciate you listening to this program and supporting it. And, It is a passing of rush that we're all going to miss, but talk conservative radio will continue, and I will be here for you. And I appreciate you letting others know we're on the air, and this entire station is devoted to conservative talk, numerous guests and hosts. Continue to listen, will you please? And remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.